Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
E-O! Showtime!
I like sweet meat. It's a juxtaposition in my mouth. I like heat.
My fly is open.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies down a Lincoln bath. For the show link, go to rectadlgs.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1064 of the Linux Link Tech Show. It's just Joe.
Yep, just me.
And I tonight. Joel will show up shortly, but who knows? Who knows? You know what, Joe? I've probably bitched about this plenty of times in the past, but when I do my updates on any one of my machines, and even if it's like with Manjaro and Art, well, I should say even with Manjaro, like it will tell me that there's updates that need to be done, but I typically don't work that way. Like using that update, I just use Pac-Man down on the line, a command line. And I do that. So Ubuntu is kind of like the same thing. It's like, hey, there's updates. Click to install. And then it says, you know, do you want to reboot afterwards? Whatever. And it comes back up. And I've never had any issues. I can keep working. When I finally do reboot, usually you don't have to, but sometimes some devices get a little funky, especially if you've changed the kernel, if it's updated the kernel or whatever, and it wants to reboot so that those devices will continue to work as you expect them to. Generally speaking, not a problem. And a reboot is like not very long, like a minute, if that. The other side to that is the updates I have to suffer through on the OS X side, where I usually comes down and it says you have a deferment if you want to defer it up to 5 times. And somehow the 5 times the next morning becomes we're doing it now no matter what. And it's usually like I have a standing meeting 10:30 every morning. At 10:15, it's telling me we're shutting everything down and we're going to reboot. Now, if it is an OS level update, if I close out of all the applications, I could be fairly certain that it's going to apply the updates, reboot, do whatever it needs to do and come back. If it's kind of more like an application update, like Chrome or Firefox or Slack, whatever, it's a crapshoot, like a 50-50 chance that it's going to come back and say, couldn't update this, whatever it was. Or I have no idea whether it was finished updating. It's like, we're going to shut the application down now to update. Okay. And then you sit there and it never notifies me that it's finished. Like once in a blue moon, it will. But most of the time it doesn't. So I don't know if I could start the application up again or not. It's just, it's a confusing mess. But the worst one is, like I said, when it's like an OS level update and it needs to do the install, but it has to restart and it turns what should be a fairly quick update into this, who knows how long it's going to take. Is it going to be 15 minutes? Is it going to be a half hour? Why does it tell me it's got like 9 minutes left and it's already been 15 minutes? It tells me it has 1 minute left and it's 3 minutes later. I'm still waiting. It's got that Windows kind of how long it's going to take a file to copy thing going on there where, you know, it's like the bar is almost 90% complete, but it takes longer to do that last 10% than it did the rest of it. Very annoying. I don't like it. So I very much appreciate how Linux does almost everything. Bravo. Bravo. And I was watching, my daughter was watching this YouTube short of this guy who was reviewing products that he impulse bought off of Temu. I think that's it, right? It's Temu? Is that it?
Yeah, there's a couple of different places where you can buy stuff.
I think it was Temu. It was a Bezos device, it was called, or something like that. It was like this little Android-based portable device that looked like an iPhone, but it was about two-thirds the size of an iPhone and a bit fatter. And it wasn't a phone at all. It was just an Android device that had like YouTube on it and a few other applications. And apparently he was using it for a little while and it crashed and it came up and he's like, oh, it's got this Windows start machine. And clearly it's the Android laying on its side with the guts hanging open telling you that it crashed and it needs to you gotta do a little bit of button maneuvering there to tell it how you wanted to restart or whatever recovery you wanted to do. But the guy didn't know what the hell he was doing. So then he just gave up and tried to shoot it with a bow and arrow and slammed it on the ground. And yeah, one of those kind of things. No clue what's going on. But anyway, there we are. And I was gonna save this for Joel, but I don't know if he's actually gonna show up here today. And we were talking a little bit before the show in regards to ServiceNow, so I had a request that I had to make today, to change our Okta chiclet. No, I don't want to say it's the Okta chiclet, but it's associated with the Okta chiclet, but our, Okta callback for our suite of applications in our local environment from instead of going to localhost to go to a domain. So I contacted our identity management group that handles that via email and they were like, oh yeah, just, put in a ServiceNow request ticket, call it SREQ ticket. And I'm like, why can't we just settle this man to man through email, right? Why do we gotta bring ServiceNow in? You know, and I know it's every single time this happens, it's always the same thing. I go over to ServiceNow. There is a couple of buttons on the page. Links, not buttons, telling me I can see what tickets I have open. I can see a few other things, but there is no button to open a ticket. But there is a button to say, well, how do you request help? And so you click on that. And one of the first things that it says is, why can't I just open a ticket? And they say, well, it's because there's a lot of things that need to be collected depending on what you need to have done. So we have conveniently created for you a series of tasks that you just pick the tasks that you want to do. And invariably, whatever it is that I want done, there isn't a task for it.
awesome.
Right. So there is a task. There is a workflow to request an application be set up in Okta. But if you try to use that, it's like 30 fields of stuff I don't need to fill out. And I'm like, what? It's ridiculous. I'm not setting it up. I'm trying to get something simple changed. So I look back at the email that response that I received and I'm like, just open a ServiceNow service request ticket. And so I contacted our lead who works in ServiceNow more than I do. And he absolutely hates it too. And I'm like, look, man, I am over here. I know what I want to do, but I can't find out how to do it. Right. So I'm looking under the networking. I'm looking under application stuff. And there's just nothing to do. There is one there to submit like a change, not even a change. I forget how it was worded, but it wasn't anything at all like I wanted to do. It was the closest that I could find that seemed like I could just, it would open up an incident ticket or something like that. I think it was, I don't know. And he came back and he's like, well, why don't you just click on, try this one, which is submit a request. And I'm like, where the hell did you find that? And it's under the,
hamburger menu?
It's under the online office applications.
That's obvious.
Yeah, it's like, well, I need to change something I'm having a problem with Office 365. Or these things. One of the cloud-based applications. And then there's just submit a request. And I'm like, this is fucking stupid. Now, the identity management team asked me to submit a request and assign it to them. But I have no ability to assign the request to anybody. I can't even, like, so I open up I open this. I'm like, this is the best I can do. So I create it in there and it creates a service request, an SREQ ticket. And I email them back and say, this is the best I could do. I don't have the ability to open just a ticket. I have to follow the damn steps. And I send him an email, and then I go about my day, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm getting like, it's like after lunch, and there's no response. Like, I go and I look, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, the damn email didn't send. Right. It just like, it went to draft instead of sending. So I said, I'm like, oh, okay. I feel like an idiot now. And I send it off and I'm waiting and then it's like 3:30 and nothing's happening. So I go over and I look at the service request ticket and it's like, oh, there was an update at 10:28. I'm like, what's the update? The update says we tried to reach you via Teams and we tried to call your phone.
Oh, sure.
And we didn't get either way. And like, I don't use Teams. I use Slack, right? But I have Teams, but Teams notifies me for everything else in the world, but I didn't get a notification that they were trying to reach me. And yes, I did get two calls today from numbers that I had no idea where they were from, but both of them were reported as spam. So I didn't even bother with them. Oh, so then I wrote back to them. I'm like, look, I apologize. I missed this. It didn't notify me. I was putting a ticket for identity management, which they told me to do. And then they're just like, oh, okay, we're just going to assign this ticket over to identity management. And so I'm still waiting. But oh my God, ServiceNow is just.
Well, let me pose a couple of things to you. Does your development team argue with your CAB team over the release process, or does the CAB team create the goddamn release process?
Here we go, Joe. we don't have a cab team. We do our own releases. We used to have that. Yeah, so we're fully responsible for everything from development to release and deployment and making sure it works. Cause if it doesn't work, then it's on us. We used to do something similar to that where I was on the release team and you would get something and we would have to package it up. And then at like 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, we would have to release it to production. And when it was broken, we're like, well, now we got to try and get somebody from development on. And it was like a middleman situation. We're like, well, what's the problem? And then we're like, well, we don't know. We're trying to figure this out. And they're like, well, you can't touch production. And the only way you can work with it is through like the monitoring and logging tools. Anyway, that's the way that we do, Joe. I hear what you're saying though.
Right. Well, we're the release team, but we do need developers in order to be able to, you know, make changes to production. And there are very valid reasons that they keep that idea in place.
Oh, I agree with you. I know.
Yep.
Were you going to tie that to service now?
I got one to tie to service now.
Wait, what happened to Joe? Hold on, before you get on to service now.
Somehow I magically hit my mute button.
But, oops.
No, I wasn't going to tie it to service now. I was just going to talk about my crappy day.
I have one too.
Dealing with development teams trying to tell us how releases are supposed to happen when we're the ones that make the release happen according to company policy. So, yeah, I mean... tell your cab team how you're going to do releases. That's no. But anyways, an hour-long argument today where a guy tried to, you know, just completely steamroll us and ignore everything we told him. But, yeah. But now on to one of your other subjects, updating from command line. Because you were talking about that too. And, you know, I normally just look for the little icon that down in the bottom right corner that says, hey, you need to do an update. And then I drop down to command line and do updates. But that doesn't work for snaps and flat packs unless I want to do them separately. So in the end, it's easier just to use the software tool that they have built in. But I do seem to remember previously I had a tool that would do them all at once. I just can't for the life of me remember the name of it. That would do all of them at once from the command line. I was wondering if you guys...
What distribution?
A Debian distribution. It's on Mint.
Oh, on Mint. See, that's the thing. I have no problem with using the update thing that comes with Fedora or Ubuntu. I've used that in the past and it'll do the snaps too and everything. Mm. So.
Yeah, but I'm talking about from command line. I know there's a tool that will do all of them.
I don't know, man. I don't. Cause I don't really use a lot of snaps or flat packs.
So, I use whatever's available.
Yep. So my ServiceNow story of woe, how I just want to try and figure out, well, how do I get access to Lucidchart? And I try and I go, okay, well, here it is, RITM or request, you know, do a request. I go to the request and it goes to the IT team and you say, oh, sorry, go here and put your request in there. And I'm like, okay. And they did this like late Friday when I was in the middle of 45 other things. So I put the request in over the weekend and then finally, I get it finally, like, on Tuesday. It's like, anywho. It's like, the link they sent was a link to somewhere else, and it somehow made it, still made it into ServiceNow, and it's like, and it moves all the time, so whenever, you know, the next time I need to request something 5 years from now, it's in a different spot, and it's like...
The entire process has changed.
Yeah. It's like, and then I'm working on the e-change for the Bangalore to do overnight, right? And I got the change written, and I'm like, well, who's doing the change, you know, to that team? And it's like, well, he's like, well, I'll do the change. I'm like, okay, so let's see how we can do this. Now, keep in mind, I opened this from a case, right? Open the change from a case. You would think that when you do that, the case would be attached to the change. But no, when I press request approval, it says, hey, this has to be attached to an incident or a change. I'm like, it is. I'm like, okay, let me figure this out. So, now fortunately for me, there was an incident attached to the case, and that was the only field below that I can edit and add a pre-existing object, you know, be it a case or an incident. And it's like, okay, let's attach the incident. The incident's resolved. But, oh, okay, that worked. And all this stupid paperwork to do, what is it, ostensibly a maybe 20, 30 minute job? Ugh. Nah, but, because everything is, like, all the unmonitored things are attached through ServiceNow tickets. So when you go through all the approval process for any change, then... It will schedule C tasks that will put the unmonitor in so that when you do the work, that it's completed. All right.
Uh-huh.
So that when you go to do the work, you're not getting incidents because the monitor's triggered. So it's like, you make it difficult. And then, they started giving my team problems. Now, I mean, actually, that's what they're called in ServiceNow, problems, problem tickets, right? All right.
They're not giving you actual problem, giving you grief. They're giving you problems.
Right. That you need problems to solve in the, too. Yeah. Well, not necessarily that. Okay. So, like, I had a case come in last week. Hey, website's not accessible. Website's not accessible. I go in. And I'm like, huh, I bounce stuff, do stuff, still not accessible. I'm like, well, let's take a step back and look at the configuration in IIS. Go in IIS, look at the port 443 binding. Guess what's not attached to the port? Fucking certificate. I go digging in it, find the right certificate, attach it to the port, and bingo bango, stuff starts to work. Now, how the fuck did that happen? Two ways. Somebody changed it with a script and ain't fessing up that their script's fucked. Or somebody changed it manually and ain't fessing up that they did it. So who gets the problem ticket? I do. I said, okay. I don't know how this happened. I want to assign this over to the engineering team because they're the ones that write the scripts. They're the ones that do those kinds of changes, not us. We're just support. And of course, I'm waiting for somebody to kick back and says, well, we weren't involved in the case or the incident. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I don't give a shit if you're involved or not. I fixed your ass. Now, are you going to tell us how this broke? Or the other one, now this is not ServiceNow related, somehow... Our client had the right idea that they could just install software updates in the middle of the day without the system being quiet. They have the power to, they have all the rights to, but of course system's not quiet, so guess what happens? Creates record locks because it's trying to change constraints and stuff in the database, which you don't want to do when system's up and running. So they did this like Friday, and we came in, we fixed it, okay? And overnight happened again because they thought, well, it's overnight, we can do this, right? System's quiet, right? No, you actually have to kick users out of the system and apply that change. You know, so I go to the CSDM, I'm like, why are they doing this? She's like, they can do that? I'm like, yeah, they can do that. Why are they doing this? Our admin team should be doing that work for them. I haven't heard back from her, but it's like, and so it's like all 40 kinds of different paperwork just to do a 10-minute job, and it's really getting old. And it's one of those things where if I have friends that are still raising kids, I tell them, don't have your children go into IT work. It's not as fulfilling as it used to be.
Yeah.
I keep doing it, though, because it's what I know.
Where's Joe?
I don't know. They got a baby.
He's still here.
Is it Package Kit PK Con?
No, I don't think that was the one I was using, but if it works.
So I don't. Like, supposedly Package Kit should be able to do your distribution packages, flat packs, and snaps now. That's the only thing I could find.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Check out the Arch Wiki page.
I thought you were talking about Link. Not Link. Linux Mint.
Yeah, but the Arch Wiki has everything.
No, yeah, that's true. The Mint Wiki should have it, right?
Why, when the Arch Wiki exists?
That's one thing, you know, I like this, I like Arch, this is not just an Arch issue, but there's one thing where Windows/Mac are better at dealing with is browser updates. In order to update Chrome, I just relaunch the browser and it fucking updates on Mac or on Windows. In Linux, no matter whether it's Arch or Ubuntu or Fedora, doesn't matter. You just get the message, hey, your browser is out of date. It's like, damn, let me go ahead and run PowMac build Google Chrome so that Google Chrome updates. I know why it is. I don't have to like it.
Wait, on what? What are you running PowMac build?
Google Chrome, with Google Chrome updates.
For what OS?
Arch or Manjaro.
PowMac, what is PowMac build?
That is what builds Google Chrome. I believe it builds it out of AUR, I think, but let me double check on that.
Wait. Oh, I see. I know that generally.
You could probably use Pac-Man too.
Well, if it's in AU, like I don't know if Google Chrome is in the Arch repositories proper. It
probably isn't, but that there's a link to the webpage in OMG Linux about that. But that's basically the way you install it is the way you update it. So you already have it installed, new version, new patched version of it comes out. You want that, you have to run that every time. You can also do it with the GUI method. Which, you know, why? It's a one-liner.
See, I thought you could also just go over to Google Chrome and
you may be able to, but you have to convert the dev or the RPM, I think.
Hold on. I'm trying to remember. Because I switched to using Firefox a long time ago.
Then you don't have a problem.
Yeah, no, I don't. But I have Google Chrome on here, and I'm trying to remember how I got...
I did get back. You still have to update your browser the same way through operating system updates, essentially.
Right.
Right. On Windows or Mac, all I do is relaunch the browser and I get the new version of the browser. Ask me which one's simpler. Like I said, I know why. You know, like I said, don't have to like it.
Because if I'm into Manjaro, add remove software and updater.
Right.
I could just type in Google Chrome and it's in there.
It probably just runs that in the background, right? Yeah.
Right.
Oh, you can use the GUI. Yeah.
So basically, what you're saying is you like that you prefer the way that if you're going to install a piece of software that you download from the company's website, well, then you want it to update itself automatically, right?
Yeah, essentially.
Instead of going, because I think,
and I know it's an operating system difference, and that's okay, you know. But
I'm trying to recall whether if you were to download Google Chrome from the Google Chrome website, where you're pulling down the Debian or the RPM package.
See it. Last I did that on Ubuntu, what essentially happens is I believe when you do that. With the deb, it automatically puts the repo in there. Cause they only have to run the dpackage-i and then put the package name after I downloaded it once. Okay. After that, I just run a apt-get still works too, but apt is how you do it now.
Update, upgrade, auto remove.
Right. And actually, I don't even do the auto remove. It just does it, you know. Auto-bond-to.
Yeah, so if you go to Google Chrome, you can, you get the option of a Debian or a
RPM
or an RPM, and then it adds that into your package manager.
Correct.
And so then it just updates with your package manager. So you just want it to do like the way that I was bitching about when OS 10 tells me it needs to install a new version of Chrome, and then it has to close everything down, restart it, and then I have no idea whether it completes or not.
It's still better than Safari, so.
So yeah, I always end up with a problem in that on my work laptop, we're only supposed to install software off of the software services menu.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, whatever it's called.
Like, is it called Jasper? I forget what it's called.
I know what it's called. Damn it, I forget. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's different for
though.
Every company, though. Whatever they have it managing is. It, and so, like, the version is always out of date. And if I install Firefox on my own, the latest one, then it picks up that Firefox is on my machine and then it'll say, you need to update Firefox. And it, by updating, it's actually downgrading to a previous version. And then Firefox comes back and says, there's a new version of Firefox. And then it upgrades it back up to the version that's the latest. And then the installer comes back, or the software center comes back and says, you need to upgrade Firefox and downgrades it. And then I end up in this freaking loop.
Problem with your configuration. I assume you're using GIMP Pro.
You know what? That sounds about it, I guess.
JAMF Pro. Yeah.
I think that's either we used that in the past or we're still using it.
Yeah, that's the number one one. Listen to this old fart's yawning. God.
Yeah, no shit. And then it has that JAMF Pro, whatever it is, has the habit of breaking Slack installs all the time. So it says you need to upgrade Slack.
I've never had that happen. It must be the policy that's set in the app. You know, cause we can download, like for example, I download install Chrome, I download install the Bruno, which I hardly use. What else did I, I bought a Stream Deck and I actually use it, for work. I use it for I have a shortcut buttons installed or, configured in it so that I hit a button and it automatically goes to snow on the dashboard, you know, or something like that. Or, with the monitors for it or whatever it is, so. But yeah, we're pretty loose on that. You know, we can install, I won't say anything, for example, they do run scanners, for example, if we still had, what's the other API tester? Postman, I think. If we had that installed because of the recent license changes, they would say you need to uninstall that and install Bruno instead. You'd literally get emails about it.
Now, yeah, and so what ends up happening with Slack with us, and it happens to everybody at some point, and it usually happens every couple of months to you, to the same person. It happens to me once every 4 or 5 months where it'll go say you need to update Slack. And then it'll either you think it's updated or it'll tell you it updated or it couldn't update. And then 10 minutes later it says you need to update Slack. And then it keeps doing that over and over and over again. Until you uninstall Slack and then reinstall it from scratch. It's a pain in the ass. Yeah.
That's never happened to me.
I don't know what the hell they're doing on their, side.
Not long after I got my MacBook Pro, when I first got it, it had, whatever the previous version of Mac OS was, Monterey or whatever it was. But I'm current. And whenever a new version comes out, that's the one kind of cool thing with the Apple ecosystem is if they release an iOS update or an iPad update, they also release the Mac update the same day pretty much.
Your company does?
No, Apple.
Oh.
And my company doesn't care. They just let me install it.
Oh, that's nice. We kind of have to wait until it's approved. Yep. So we're a couple versions behind.
I mean, at some point, like for example, when the next release hits, that might be something that's their slow. But once that's approved, then every update after that, every security update that comes down, no problem. Installs right away. So. But the one thing I don't like about the Mac ecosystem is I have AirPods because they do tend to work better on my iPad and my iPhone, which I really never use them with my iPhone. I use it mostly with my iPad. But say if I'm watching something with my AirPods in my ears on my iPad while I'm working, I have it on kind of in the background or something, and I do anything in Mac OS that has it generate a sound, it moves the fucking headphones to the MacBook, and I'm like, I don't want it there. Same thing goes is like if I'm watching, like if I'm on call and I'm on the couch downstairs watching a movie or something with my iPhone next to me for to grab the on calls pages, it will automatically switch over to my iPhone when I get a page. But I can be able to say, no, don't do that right now. So, other than that, you know, it's kind of nice, you know, to have that kind of integration. But I will say this, though. Don't overlook Garmin watches at all. They are far superior to either the unless you're a fool who likes to look at your watch all damn day and want to look at the nice, pretty OLED screen, fine. You know, go buy one of those. I don't care. I just want it to function, and I don't want to have to charge a fucker every day. The Garmin watch does more than my Wise watch did, and I only have to charge it maybe once a week. If that, I can probably go longer if I push it. It's so much better. Every other smartwatch I've ever tried, they have you, well, you pretty much have to charge it every day. Unless you do things like disable this always on screen. Which is kind of the whole point of having a watch. It's better than the Ring, though. I still ain't figured out why there's companies like Aura, you know, or like, for example, you got Samsung, they bring out a Ring, and they bring out a watch, and they both do kind of the same thing. I'm like, alright. But 2 days this week, though, I did 20,000 steps. Today was not the third.
As per your Garmin watch?
Correct. And I plan on doing 5 days at 20,000 steps. That's about roughly 8 miles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like yesterday I did like... Monday kind of sucked. All right. All week has really kind of sucked work wise, but Monday I got a blister like Saturday. Yeah, I think it was Saturday, and Sunday I didn't do any hiking or walking. I just did the necessary walking and kind of stayed off my foot because I had this big old blister on the right hand side of my feet just behind the toes So Monday, that really hurt, but I did go out and do 2 miles in the morning, but, and it didn't pop then. It made it through, but it hurt, and I had a much slower pace, but I got out, still did 2 miles. And then after work, I went out and I did, and basically what I'm doing is there's a 1.9 mile trail. It's a loop trail, right? So Monday morning I did one loop. Monday night after work I did 3 loops. So that would be 6 miles. Or almost 6 miles. It's actually 5.7. So that got me to 20,000 then. Yesterday I did 2 loops in the morning and 2 loops in the evening. And I got 20,000 steps. Now today I only did 1 loop. Then I did a walk at lunch instead of eat. I kind of ate while I was working and then went for a walk, got back and then was able to, get a few more in. And by just walking the rest around the house, my daily goal is 10,000. This is just a week I'm trying to challenge myself to do more, and I'm going to probably go back to the 10,000-ish next week. So I gotta go look at the calendar. I put more vacation in October, but I know I think all my scheduled vacations already out of my balance. But I think I still have like 80 hours of vacation just because of my time with the company. I think I'm getting like 3 weeks a year or something like that. What'd you say, Joe?
That's it.
Yeah, it might be more now. I have to look. I don't know. I know that it's one of those things I struggle with. I have in the past left vacation on the table, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, it's usually, I don't know, I thought it was pretty standard for 4 weeks to be the minimum, and then you gain more over time.
Actually, the minimum that I've always had was 2. And you get more over time, yeah.
At 4.
Man, I hated it when you first started a new job and they didn't give you any vacation the first year. I don't think they do. A lot of places don't do that anymore.
No.
That sucked. And then you get like a week your first year, after your first year, and it's like, oh, what a
You know what I want to do, Dan? I want to retire.
Already?
I can't. I need more time.
Yeah.
Shit, I want to retire too.
If I'd have stayed at Columbus State, I probably could have retired.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't have made as much money, though, but...
No.
I think, because they started there when I was, like, 22.
Retire and get a job at Home Depot or a greeter at Walmart? Is that it?
Yeah, that's what my dad did. I think he got laid off from his last, like, real, like, job in his career. He was in construction, right? And at some point, you know, people like him that had been doing the job, he was like a purchasing agent, right? Doing that job for 30 plus years, right? And they decided, well, unless you have a college degree, we can't continue to keep you employed. And I'm like, what does that have to do with that? He's done this and purchased shit for construction sites for years. You know?
That sucks. But,
yeah, so he got laid off and then he went to work, retail for a while. He did, JCPenney's, but he did retire from there. But after that, he went to work for Sam's Club. He's the guy in the deli that makes the chickens. Which they're good. But. That's what he does. Unfortunately, for him, when mom passed, she had enough life insurance to pay the house off, so he didn't have a house payment. What the hell is that?
What the hell is what?
This noise I heard. I think it's because somebody wasn't muted. Maybe it was Joe.
Is it still going on?
No, it's not.
No, I was muted when that sound came up.
That's weird.
I didn't hear it. Maybe it came through mine. I don't know what the hell it was.
Could have been.
Ay, ay, ay.
So Google released new phones last week.
The Pixel? 25?
Yeah. Or
what is it now? Pixel 7? 8? 9?
The 9. They got the Pixel 9, the Pixel 9 Pro, the Pixel 9 XL, and the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. Which is their folder, their updated version of the folder, which looks really nice. And the folder, probably the first one I saw that I said, yep, I can take what the screen looks like when you open it. You still see the crease where it folds, but it's probably the best one I've seen and you can't notice it near as much, at least most of the videos I saw, but. Instead of putting the same camera they had on the selfie cam for all the other phones, they only put a 10 megapixel one on the inside of the fold and on the outside. So that's got a hobbled camera for a $1,700 phone. I'm like, yeah, I'll go with the Pro one. That's probably the one I'm going to get. The XL Pro is probably the one I'm going to get eventually. Not right away. I'd like to kind of feel it. And at least some of them, it did come with the Qi 2 charging, which if you're unfamiliar with Qi 2, it's essentially MagSafe. It's essentially what Apple's using on their phone. It's the same chargers will work on both the iPhone as well as other Qi 2 compatible phones. But even though it doesn't have that on the phone, companies like Dbrand, I think, and Jetech, they're making cases that have the magnets in the case so that you can use MagSafe chargers with them too. But either way, the MagSafe is going to go slower than plugging it into the USB-C port. And those phones, I think all of them, including the Fold, have 16 gig of RAM and varying storage depending on what, where you get it. Like, I think the only one that Verizon has in the XL Pro is the 512 gig model, which is the one I'll get. I don't really need that much storage. But, you know, cause I upload, like I have the auto upload stuff turned on the, Google Photos, and automatically uploads every picture I take and then deletes the local copy. Very handy. So if I look at my phone now, which is Pixel 6 Pro with 512, it's not even half full. So I don't really need that much storage, but apparently that's what I'll get. So. And they come with a year of free Gemini Advance. That's their AI thing. Which I actually have been playing with the regular Gemini, taking the statistics class, working on homework. I'll take a picture of the problem and say solve and attach it into Gemini and say solve it, and it will. The only caveat, though, is in statistics, you will use – there's several different tables with data in it that you will use for some of the predictions, stuff like that. And I'm trying to remember what the name of the tables are. But if the table that your textbook uses is not the same as what Google uses to solve it, then the problem, you will have that answer wrong. So you gotta, at the very minimum, if you don't use it to answer every question, like if you're having trouble with a question, it's really nice, you can take a picture of it, you know, if it's like a math question or something like that, it usually gets it right. And not only gets it right, but it explains to you how to figure it out. So. But I'm almost done with my statistics course. I got this week and next week. And then I'm taking the rest of the year off, because I'm about out of money from the company. And I don't really have an extra $2,000 to spend, in January. Or, December, I mean. So I'm just gonna switch it to, every other semester starting January 1st. That way, one, I get a break, and two, my money will last stretch of year. It just means my program's gonna take me a whole lot longer than 18 months to do. I'm still trying to figure out if it's even worth doing it either, but. Hey, maybe I can hit the Powerball tonight and I don't have to worry about any of that bullshit.
Yeah.
Including service
Brian,
now.
Well, that's my retirement plan. Hit the lotto.
Yeah, I don't
wouldn't
play it
awesome?
A lot.
Wouldn't that be awesome if, like, you won the Powerball, but the only way you can collect your money is you had to put in a service now ticket?
Right. Right. Put a service now ticket. Fuck off. Oh, did I say that? I'm sorry. Actually, I don't know if you know, Have you ever heard the podcast? It's one of the early podcasts, Technorama.
I've not listened to it, but I have heard that name before.
Yeah, Technorama, Chuck Tomasi, he is the developer advocate for ServiceNow. Well, for another few weeks, because he's retiring.
Is that good or bad? Does he like? I guess he likes ServiceNow, huh?
I guess.
Or does he advocate not using it?
No, he advocates using it. I'm sure he's wrote stuff for it before. But he lived in like Appleton, Wisconsin, and worked for a different company before, when he started both Technorama and his other ones. Chuck Tomasi is his name. Really cool guy. He brought up a guy, he's been doing his dog days of, podcasting in August, basically podcasting every day, chronicling his, retirement journey, right? And he just briefly mentioned Dave Schlesher, who that was a very early podcaster right there. I'm trying to remember what show he did. I thought we used to have to talk about that.
Wait, what show? What are you talking about? Who?
Dave Schlesser.
Oh! Is it Schlesser or Schlesher?
I don't know.
Oh man, that name's.
I'm trying to remember what show it was, because it was a big one.
Oh.
One of the first ones, too.
Evil Genius Chronicles.
That's it. Yeah, he mentioned him. I guess he's still doing it, too.
Is he? Let's see. Let me see if it's, I don't know if it's still around.
His podcasting's like 20 years old now.
Yep.
Yep, Dave Schlesser.
No, he's still doing it.
Yep.
So, the first episode was released on August 20th, 2004.
Yep.
Congratulations to him. Good right? job.
It's speaking of Chuck, too, if you ever see the book Podcasting for Dummies, he wrote it.
Wait, who did?
Chuck Tomasi from Technorama.
Oh.
Yeah.
Guess what I bought today, Joel?
Well, a new phone?
Guess. What? A new phone? No. I'll tell you what, though, that phone's becoming a pain in my ass. It is sucking through that battery.
It's time
like
for a new one, man.
Today. Like, I got to put it on the charger like twice a day to keep up. I don't know what is sucking the hell out of that battery. But, so, like, I watched my neighbor's dog for a week, and he gave me $100 Amazon gift card as a thank you. I watch this dog like almost every day too. Instead of her hanging out at home and trashing his place, she comes over and hangs out with Herc over here. And they have a good old time begging at the door to go outside so they can come back in and get a snack. Cause I'm a sucker for that. But anyway, You never guess what I got with that $100.
No clue.
My daughter thinks I'm an idiot. My wife is like, I don't know if you're ever going to use that. And I'm like, damn it, woman. I've been thinking about this for a couple days now when I came upon this idea to buy this. And she's like, I think it's going to be more work than you expect, and you're not going to do it. One of the things, so we just got back from Brigantine a week and a half ago, and one of the things I absolutely love when I go out there to Brigantine is I love taking an outdoor shower, right?
You got an outdoor shower.
I'm close. I got a portable camp shower and a pop-up, like, privacy screen. Because, you know, my neighbors don't want to see me sitting out there showering off, right? So I did. I got a portable camp shower, which is why my wife is like, I don't know if you're going to use that as much as you think you are. So it's –
Dan just wants to stand out there naked and get clean.
Oh, man, I love taking the outdoor shower. It's just so nice. The sun is coming in through the top. You got a nice little cool wind and breeze blowing. You know, you're just sitting out there showering off after you get back from the beach. I love it. And since I go to the beach every day, I'm like, I'm going to give it a try. It was like, all together, it was like $89 for the screen and the portable shower. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't heat the water. Like, I could buy a device to heat it. But the other thing is I could just, like, fill up. It comes with its own, like, collapsible bucket, but you could use any bucket with it. So I figured I could just take one of the many buckets I have, fill it up, and leave it out in the sun over, that day. And then the next morning when I come back from the beach, I just pop that pump in there and set up the whole thing and just shower off and just enjoy my life. And then if I want to, I can buy a heater for it, which is like $30. But I just figured I'll start small first. So Joel, when you come over next time, you can take a shower outside of my house.
I'm gonna pass.
I would love to I would love to just have like a real outdoor shower, but I'm not going to try and do that here because we don't own the house. So it'd be just a waste of money. But yeah,
that reminds me of, well, here's a curious thing you will only see in certain parts of the country too. The first house I remember living in, was in Vandergrift, Pennsylvania. It's still standing today. It's not in very good shape because you can actually see it on Google Maps. And it's an alley, okay? But the thing I remember the most was, okay, they had the living room and our bedrooms were upstairs. All right, downstairs in the basement, it was kind of built a little bit like a bi-level, right?
Okay.
So you go down to the basement and then the kitchen and open out into the yard, right?
Oh, and I know, like I know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
But the curious thing about it, like, it's like, there was our playroom was right off the kitchen, right? But then right behind that, there's a door, and that's where my dad, where the water heater and our washer dryer, stuff like that was. And, that's where my dad also would sit and work on models and stuff when he was much younger, of course. And, but in there was a shower and a toilet. And the reason that is, and it's very common, because it's technically the basement too, but it's very common in that area. Gotta think, it was Pittsburgh area, right?
Right.
So, what happened in Pittsburgh? Steel. Right? So the steel workers, that's when they built houses, that's what they would do, is they would put this, right off the basement, and they'd have an entrance that they could go right into the basement, strip off all their clothes, which had metal dust and ash and stuff all over it from the steel making process, all right, and gather all that stuff up, wash up, and they take a shower, take a shit, and then go get a beer. That's just how it was. And a lot of bathrooms, or a lot of basements in that area had bathrooms in the basement. With a shower and everything.
Was that house built on like a hill?
It was actually, yeah.
Okay, cause it was like your, I'm gonna assume like your front door went in, and it was like the living room and the bedrooms, and then down
right.
the steps, there was a kitchen, and all that stuff, and then you walked
also,
out the back door into the yard.
Yep, and it also did not have central air conditioning. Of course, you know, this is the 70s and early 80s that we lived there.
Yeah, so. Not a lot of places did at that time. I remember we had that wall air conditioner. The kind of, like, there was a cutout of your wall and you stuck that in there.
Oh, it's probably a Windows air conditioner too.
Yeah, I guess. But you know what? The one that we had in our house, I don't think it was a window. Like an official window. I think it was actually a hole for the air conditioner. Because where that was, it was the specific size for the air conditioner. And there wasn't a window in it. Like there wasn't a windowsill or whatever. It was just, that seems like a really stupid thing to do. You know what I mean? Put a hole in there for that air conditioner. With the expectation that if you ever needed to replace the air conditioner, you got to get one that fits that hole exactly or has extenders to
I'm trying to see
cover
if I
the
can,
rest of it up.
I wonder if I could share this. I'm looking at that house in Street View now, and it looks almost – it looks like they ain't done shit to it since I lived there in the 70s. There we go. Let me see if this works.
Remember, we got our house in Bethlehem, and one of my – no, wait. I don't think it was the house in Bethlehem. I think it was the apartment that Aaron had.
Yep, that works. That's what it is. That was the house that I was in – we lived in when I was, like, kindergarten to fourth grade.
Well, check it out. Aaron has an apartment. Go ahead.
Oh. It even has that ugly green, had that ugly green awning on it. In fact, I think my dad put that on there as a favor to the owner.
Is it the one with the chimney?
Yeah, the one, with the chimney up front.
Oh,
yeah,
that
window
awning needs repairs. What happened?
Yeah.
Where did it go? Oh, there it is.
That window right next to that chimney was actually the window to the bathroom. I don't know where that chimney came. I think it was there. And I know that whole porch area looks a little different. And, in the living room, you see the window to the right of the, or the left of the mailbox? That's where the air conditioner, my dad, had. I think that belonged to us. I think he bought it. We also had like later when we lived there, we did have a dishwasher, but it was one of those, deals that you, would roll it, you know, over to the sink and attach it to the sink. You know, cause you didn't want to, you know, you're renting the house. You didn't want to have to, do that, but yeah. Of course, when I lived there, you know, it looked a whole lot better than this. But that hill, between the yellow house, there's a yellow house on the right, that hill, that's what we used to sled down. In 78, when we had the blizzard of 78, that snow pile reached up to that roof line, and we'd climb up to the top of that snow pile and slide all the way down in there. And in the backyard, there was briars at the end of this, at the fence, and of course we'd run right into it, didn't care, we didn't give a shit. We were kids. And I don't know what happened to the neighbor's house on the left, cause that looks even worse than the other house. But if you look at, you ever look at, up this area on Zillow, the prices of houses are damn cheap.
Well,
probably
imagine.
You probably don't want to live there.
Was that your chair out in the front there?
Nah, none of that stuff existed. If we sat in a chair out there, we had those folding lawn chairs with the mesh that you could replace when you ripped it.
Do you have a tire swing?
No, we didn't. We didn't have no tire swing. Yeah, I remember running all around that neighborhood with we had the Batman walkie-talkies with the little switch on it to flip out like the Star Trek communicators did. On Channel 14.
How many people living in that house?
Well, we were there four.
Woo.
Me, my brother, and mom and dad. That's where we were when we lived through the tornado that hit that area. It was I think I was 79. And my great grandpa lived down by Dungaya Lumber down there. We went to Scouts somewhere on Custer Avenue, I think it was. I think both the schools I went to when we lived there are gone. Either gone or been replaced. It was a very small town and very, there was like, we had like a Shop and Save, Fisher Big Wheel. It was a big deal when I was a kid to go to Lower Borough and go get some, Burger King.
Home of the Whopper, baby.
Yeah, that big beef pure double Whopper, man, that's good, right?
Texas double Whopper.
Texas double Whopper, yeah. My son gets the Bacon King every time we get Burger King. I don't do that no more. I'm doing okay on the diet wise. Yeah, at least my foot, I'm pretty much walking on my foot normally now. The Tuesday that blister decided to pop open. But it's starting to heal up and dry up.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. All that hiking I did prior to doing the Mammoth March, and through that whole thing, I never got a blister. But of course, what happens on that march? Get a blister.
It was a long march.
It was. Yeah, I think.
Now you just got to get calluses.
We're going to do that next year, but I think we may do the other Ohio one that's up in Cuyahoga Valley National Park, mostly because I looked at it and it looks a lot easier to get through. Not entirely easy. There's still hills, it's just they're not narrow. That's the one thing that I didn't like about this trail is it was a narrow trail, and then if you slip the wrong direction, you're going down that fucking hill, dude, and you're going to be hurt. Yeah, I think it's one of the harder ones. They even said it on their website and on the Facebook page that was one of the harder marches that they do. I'm debating doing the Hot Chocolate 5K in November.
Oh, you should do that.
The only thing is you have to maintain 17 minutes per mile. So that's about 4 miles an hour, and I'm not sure if I could do that. I might be able to. I started making myself Well, first time this week, this morning, I actually broke out into a run a little bit, in little pieces, parts of the trail. Basically, where there wasn't a lot of tree roots and stuff, I would, sprint from one part to the next. So I tried to push myself to do that kind of stuff. And when the snow starts to fall, I'm going to do that on the treadmill for sure. But we'll see. I kind of want to do it with a group. So I want to wait and see if they really want to, if we're really going to have a bunch of people that's going to do it. The only thing I don't like is it's on a Sunday. It's early enough that we probably could get it done and, make it to church too. Might be a little sweaty, but oh well. If you haven't done that one or heard of that one, Dan, that's basically, yeah, that's what you get at the finish line is they get you your medal, and you get hot chocolate.
Well, there you go.
And, chocolate fondue and stuff.
And that defeat the purpose of running?
You would think, right? It's okay to have a cheat day.
Yeah, well, especially after a 5K, huh?
Yeah.
There you go.
Distance-wise, I know I'm okay, but I know that what they'll do is they'll make you leave the course if you can't keep the limit, the speed. But it's not, you know, it's not a fast speed. They say it's a fast walk, but to me it feels almost like a run. But we'll see. I might sign up. It's like $44.
You get a t-shirt, right?
No, you get a fleece jacket, actually.
Oh, well, there you go.
And I understand. I've never done one, but you have to pick up your race packet, like, before the day.
Yeah. Usually,
it's
kind of
weird. Yeah.
You just stop by, pick it up, and good to go.
Yep.
We got to wrap it up. Speaking of going, I got to get to bed. Workout time is coming. So I want to play us out here. You guys have a great week. And here it is, your promo.
I am short.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah, I put the link in this in the Mumble chat for that. You can see the fleece you get. It looks like a nice fleece.
I should sign up for a 5K again.
And fun, too. Little bowl with hot chocolate, marshmallows, and chocolate you dip and stuff into. Or there's that. There's another one that I was thinking about doing called Gordy's Pumpkin Run. That's in October. I'm not sure if I'll be ready for that yet, but might want the extra time.
Do you run with a pumpkin?
I don't think so. I picked up more t-shirts over the weekend, too. I got a couple t-shirts to make. I don't know what I'm putting on them yet. I just make them just for the hell of them now. I can't do as many as like our good old friend Mordancy used to for us. In fact, I don't have any of my Tilt shirts anymore. They're all gone. They all wore out. Yeah, that yellow one.
I have a yellow one, an orange one. I have a white one that I have packed away.
A black one too.
black one. I don't think I ever had a black one.
You never got the black one with the bleached out logo that we give at OLF that one time? Dad, dude, now we, even if we wanted to, it would probably cost us two or three times as much to do it if we wanted to do it at a Linux Fest again.
Yeah. Well.
I mean, you think about that. I mean, everything costs more now. It's just...
Back in the day, we were throwing money right out the window.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't say that. I think we only paid $300, I think, that one year.
That's still throwing money right out the window.
Right.
Ungrateful bastards.
They loved our t-shirts.
Yes,
they liked
they
our t-shirts better than the OLF ones in some cases.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
And our,
hacky sacks.
Oh, yeah, and the OSD, that we gave away.
Neuros.
Neuros, yeah.
We used to do those raffles. They got to be so big and so long that they told us,
yep.
How about you just combine
do
it with
ours?
With the last, because it just got too, oh man, that got crazy.
Sure as heck did. Oh, I just realized I haven't taken my Metformin yet, but I'll run downstairs and take that, then I'll go watch an episode of Eureka, then go to bed.
You watch an episode of Urethra?
Eureka.
Oh, okay.
We talk.
Getting any reprieve at work?
Well, we got the new guy. We're getting the new guy trained right now. Well, we're still working on access and training at the same time.
Yeah. How long does it take for you guys to get access?
It depends. I mean, if everything goes right, it should be a week.
Oh.
I've seen it take as long as 2 months. We're having the same argument this year that we had last year with whether or not development teams think that they need to actually follow the company policy in regards to releases.
Uh-huh.
Somehow they think they're special.
How easy is it for you to request access?
We use ARM mostly. Mostly everything's converted to ARM. So, not difficult.
Wait, what's ARM?
It's just a automated request system.
Oh, okay. Because all our requests for access have to go through ServiceNow. And I never have to request anything for anybody. But
yeah, I know that we're going to be switching to ServiceNow for our ticketing system.
No! You tell them no!
It's got to be better than the one we currently got. It's got to be.
I don't know, man. I don't know. We've been, you know, I've spoken about this. We've been using Jira, and it is just so, I find it so much easier to use than ServiceNow. But it probably doesn't do a third of the crap that ServiceNow does.
Right. We also use Jira for certain things. Mostly for the dev team to track issues, but that's just the dev team. We're from the support side. We're looking at we have been using my ITSM, but it's garbage. And then before that, we were using an in-house built one called MailWatch, and it was garbage. And before that, we were using Papa, which is front end for Remedy.
Yeah, that's what I found, like, with most every ticketing system, there's always, like, some bit of jank there that is just...
Well, people will, you know, send us a request to do something, and 20 minutes later, we might get it, but we won't get a notification that we got it, and then they might send an update, or they might send a new ticket. But because it's the same person sending it, it attaches itself to a closed ticket, so we don't see anything.
Uh-huh.
Or it attaches itself to a previous ticket that's currently assigned, so nobody checks it. Because, well, it's assigned, and if that person's not there that day, then, well, it doesn't get checked. I mean, when you got what's supposed to be a 15-minute turnaround time and you're not getting a ticket until 20 minutes later, people tend to get angry.
No, I can understand that. I get angry too.
Yeah. I mean, I understand it from their side, not that their, you know, anger moves me in any way. It's always great when people spend 10 minutes yelling at you and your response is, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I, given the fact that Dave is not here by now, I assume he's not going to show up. So we might as well just get the show started because Joel is probably at church. And he'll be around soon.
Dave said he wasn't showing up?
Who?
Or did Dave say he wasn't showing up?
I didn't hear anything from him, but he's not here. He's usually here, like, before now.
Right.
So, we'll see. Maybe he'll show up. I don't know. But I'll get this going and go with that. It's 1,064. Your kids are in college, right?
Two of the three.
Is the other one in high school?
Yeah, he just started his freshman year.
Is he back to school already, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. When did he go back? This week?
Last week.
Oh. So my daughter starts next week. My wife's been back to work as of last Wednesday. Then they got back to school night tomorrow, so she's got to work till late for that. And setting up the classroom. Well, I'll tell you what, she asked me to come over. So classrooms, they all have those, like, fluorescent lights in the top, like offices do. And she had asked the custodian, she's like, can I just get the bulbs removed from this one? Because the lighting is not ideal and terrible. And he's like, I'm not allowed to remove the bulbs. I'm not allowed to do that. But if for some reason it stops working, I don't need to fix it. So she's like, my mom's like, can you come over today and help me get, you know, take the bulbs out of the ballast? And I'm like, sure, I'll do that. So I come over there and I get up. And I try to take that plastic cover off the, you know, the front. And I'm bending and all of a sudden it just snapped in half.
Whoops.
And the whole thing just came down. I'm like, oh, cripes. And she's like, oh. She was so devastated and like so like worried she was going to get in trouble. And then I go to try and take the bulbs out and they won't come out. And I'm like, I'm like, cause I've done this before, but these right. things, they won't come out. And I'm like, I don't want to break them in my hand. Cause that's not good.
That would suck.
Yeah. That would really suck. So I'm like, she's like, no, don't worry about it. I'm like, you know what? We could just go to Home Depot and get another one and, you know, nobody's going to know. And she's like, she looked them up like $45 a piece. And she's like, I'm just going to, she did buy like covers to put on them, the magnetic like sheets that go over to cover them and reduce the intensity of the light. And I'm like, well, just put the cover over it and nobody will know. But then she fessed up. She's on good terms with the custodian. He's like, ah, whatever. He just came in and put a new one in. So he didn't care. She was all worried for nothing. But yeah, those things are fragile as hell.
Yes.
I didn't expect that. I was like, oh, I did just bend it a little bit to try. There must be some other way to get those out of there than trying to like,
not that I'm aware of.
Because I'm like, how the hell did they get that in there without shattering half of them?
You gotta like push it up on one side and then pull it down on the other. And
that's what I tried. That's what I was trying to do, and it just wasn't working. And then I bent it a little too much, and it just cracked. I didn't think it was that fragile, but I live and learn. At least not on, live and learn on my taxpaying money.
Mm-hmm. Everybody else has to pay for it.
Yeah. I tell my wife all the time, I'm like, I pay your salary.
What at least you're getting a portion of your taxes back.
Yeah, it's weird. Money comes in, taxes go out, they pay her, and then
they take taxes out again.
Yeah, take that. There we go. But it's worth it. School district's doing really good. They've improved since last year. I mean, they improved since the year before. They're doing great. So, they're making strides. Where the hell am I? What am I doing here? Okay. What we got here? And all right, this is 1,064. Let's do it. And explain to me why this was working here a minute ago, because I was playing audio, and now it's not playing. Okay, so that there we go. All right, let's see. Honest to goodness. Alright, where does this go? This goes there, this goes there. Is this it? Yeah, this is it. Let's try that. Here we go.